This episode of the Sportsman's Nation is brought to you by Outdoor Edge and their complete lineup of replaceable and fixed blade knives and game processing kits. Now, in my bag this year, I had the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit. It comes in a very compact, handy carrying case, and one handle has the replaceable blade knife and the gutting blade. The other handle has the saw that comes with it. So I use the saw to split the pelvis, and I use the gut hook to open up the cavity and the blade to start cutting all the stuff out, right? So it makes cleaning a deer very simple, very easy, and the knife is sharp. And if you've ever had to gut a deer with a dull knife, we all know how much that sucks. So take a look at the Razor Pro Saw Combo Kit and head on over to OutdoorEdge.com and enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30 for 30% savings on your purchase. This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. What's up, everybody? It is a four-day week for me here at the Nine Finger Chronicles compound, which is the loft above my garage. This week is first season turkey shotgun here in Iowa. And Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday is second season shotgun here in Iowa. And I am going to be doing what a responsible father should, and I'm going to be pulling my daughter out of school on Friday and taking her turkey hunting with me. And I'll be honest, she's freaking jacked about it. She not so much about the turkeys that we're going to be chasing and the gobbling and all that stuff, more about the bag full of snacks that we're going to be carrying around with us as well. So I really think I know that I'm going to have a good time, and I just hope and pray that the birds are cooperative and allow me to get one within shooting range. That would be awesome. But as long as they're talking, as long as maybe she can see one strutting, I would love to put myself into a position to kill a bird with her right between my legs, man. That would be awesome, or sitting next to me or whatever. But that's what's on the agenda for this week. This episode is kind of a reflection of that, and although I won't be running and gunning as hard as I possibly can out in the timber, because I'll have a little tag team buddy with me, this episode is about aggressive turkey hunting tactics, and it's how I was raised. And I'm talking with a returning guest, Jonathan Payne. He was on, I think, a couple weeks ago, where he talked about one of his deer hunts. This is turkey hunting, and it sounds like he turkey hunts the same way that I turkey hunt. Like, don't waste a lot of time, call and move, and if nothing answers, or put yourself in the best position, and if it doesn't work out, flank them, go around them, try to cut them off somewhere else, and just put pressure on them and keep going until they spook or you got a bird on the ground. And we go into a ton of details, everything from roosting birds to calling strategies, decoy strategies, all that stuff is covered in this episode, and I hope you guys enjoy it. I think I'm just going to kind of keep it a quick intro. Just do me a big favor. Go to iTunes or wherever you download the Nine Finger Chronicles or the Sportsman's Nation, and do me a favor and throw a 5-star review my way, for one reason. So other people know that it's a good podcast. Everything is current. You know what I mean? Like all the reviews. I think the last review that I had, it's like people start to listen to it, they become accustomed to it, and then they don't leave reviews. So go leave me a good review if possible. And if you think I suck, leave a shitty review or not, whatever. But go do that. Follow on Instagram, follow on Facebook, and leave a review. Subscribe to the RSS feeds that you like, and that's a good starting point. But before we get into the episode, right, we got to do a commercial. And today's commercial is a product that I feel confident in, 100% confident in, and that's Wasp broadheads. And Wasp is one of those, they say that if you're not thinking about your gear and equipment, then it's doing its job. Just like a good pair of boots, if you're out hiking around and you're not thinking about your feet hurting, the boots are doing their job. And I know for a fact that if I put myself in the right position and I practice and I train, and when I release that arrow, the first thing that's going to touch that animal is the broadhead, and I know it's going to destroy whatever it touches. And that is why I love broadheads. Wasp broadheads. I have the confidence in that a majority of their heads are made in America. They have an awesome group of people behind the brand and the products, and they've been doing it for a long time, and great blood trails, all that stuff, you know, and that's why I use them. And let's see, Jackhammer for the mechanicals and Boss Four Blade for the fixed blades. Those are my two favorite heads out of their lineup. And if you want to save, let's see here, 20%, then enter the discount code 9, the number 9, fingers 2020. I believe that is, and if for some reason that doesn't work, hit me up and I'll make sure you get a more up-to-date one, but it's 9 fingers 2020, 20% off. That's a good deal. And then we have our title sponsor, Vortex Optics. These guys are doing great things, man. They have a great lineup of optics, and for really any price point. And it's quality through and through, right? So whether you want binocular spotting scopes, range finders, red dots, rifle scopes, these guys do it. They do it well. And if you have a problem with the product or need to get educated on how to use your product, you call them up, and it is their goal to get you comfortable with their products. Like, they will help you out. I guarantee it. I know too many people at that company, and they are good people who want to see you succeed. And when they got it figured out, right? So when you succeed, then they succeed. And that's a good way to think of things. And if you're a dumbass like myself and you're hard on your equipment, I've had to send my binoculars in, I think, 2 times now. One I ran over my truck, I think, and the other one, a seal broke after I dropped it out of a tree stand, and I sent it back to them. They fixed it and sent it back to me free of charge. It's their VIP warranty. So take advantage of that. VortexOptics.com. Those are today's commercials. And now let's get into aggressive turkey hunting strategies with Jonathan Payne. 3, 2, 1. All right. It's that time of year. It's springtime. The gobbles are starting to sound off in the timber, and we're joined once again by Jonathan Payne. Jonathan, how are we doing?
Doing pretty good, Dan. Just recouping from my Tennessee trip.
Yeah, how'd that
turn
out?
Get stuff ready for it. It turned out good. We 2.5 days on public. We got 3 birds on the ground.
Oh, nice.
And it turned out real good.
Awesome. The last time you were on the podcast, you kind of shared the story of run and gun whitetail hunting. And you shared the story of the season's deer hunt where you shot a really good buck from the ground. So if you're listening to this and you want to hear the whitetail story, make sure you go and chat, you know, look for Jonathan's, I guess it was like a hunter profile or using water to access whitetails, right? I forget the title of it, but that was just a couple weeks ago. But today we're going to be talking about turkey hunting strategy, and we're going to get into a little bit more detail than what we have in the past talking about turkeys, because I think there actually is a little bit more to turkey hunting than actually just sitting in behind a decoy and calling and then just waiting for them to come and then shooting them. I think there's a little bit more to it. And I know, you know, some of these strategies are weapon dependent, like if you're going to use a bow or if you're going to use a gun or whatever. But yeah, so you just got back from Tennessee, right? You shot three, yep. You and your crew shot 3 birds in 2 days?
2.5 days.
Two, yep. And a half days.
No. Yep.
What were the birds? It's awesome. What were the birds doing? I mean, were they going, you know, full bore, or were they still flocked up, or what were they doing?
They were still flocked up pretty bad. it was still real open, you know, open hardwoods with, you know, some briars and cedar thickets, but it was real open. They would hammer early in the morning, but it seemed like as soon as they hit the ground, between 8 and 9, you were pretty much done. And the crazy thing is, in the evenings, you'd go to roost them, and you would hear one gobble when they flew up.
That was it.
And I think it would just be the dominant bird saying, "Hey, we're over here." And you'd go roost in the evening. Go, "I got one bird here," so we'd go get on it. And you get there in the morning, and they'd be everywhere.
Yeah.
I've never hunted them that early before, so it was kind of a new thing. It was, you know, it's always good to try something new.
Yeah.
And it was exciting trying to figure them out, but we got lucky and we got three of them on the ground.
Yeah. So that's one thing that I typically don't do. And a lot of it is because I got, you know, I've spent all day turkey hunting, and then it's not like I want to go out again and try to roost them. But is there a method to roosting a turkey?
Yeah, there's a couple. You know, you can hoot owl at them, or you can coyote call at them. But what I like to do is I like to just get in the woods about an hour, get on a ridge top, and I just like to listen. A lot of times you can hear, you know, evident, but this past weekend, a lot of times they're not going to gobble their heads off.
Yeah.
Especially on public, you know. I 100% public. Them birds are dealing with people. They're dealing with everything all day long. And the last thing they're going to want to do is let everything know where they're at. And so I like to just listen. And a lot of times you'll get that one, two, maybe three gobbles. And that's what I like to do. But you can hoot owl, coyote howls. That's probably the most effective if you're going to call. Hoot owl, in my opinion, hoot owl is, you know, give and take sometimes.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you going into play? Like, how close are you getting? Do you have an idea of where they're going to roost? Do you have, like, from historical information, or are you just kind of walking into the woods, setting up, and trying to get them to at least respond one time so you get an idea of where they're at?
It's really terrain dependent. If say you don't have any knowledge of the area, I'll look for a steep creek drainage, and a lot of times they'll roost in the, you know, a white birch, or some big mature oaks. Those are what they're going to be roosted in. So I'll look for those on Onyx or Google Earth. Google Earth is the best for that. Or I'll get on a field edge, and I'll kind of just walk real slow and listen on you know, flat ground. But a lot of what I hunt, there's terrain to it. So I'll just get on a little knob and I'll just sit there and listen. And then right before I think they go to bed, you know, they stick their head under their wing and they're just done. I'll make one call. I don't like calling too much because they're supposed to be dumb birds, but there's just something in me, you know, they're trying to survive day in and day out. And I don't want to give them any reason to, give them any heads up.
I would say that they are a dumb bird, but they're antsy. And I think the fact that they're antsy and real nervous animals is one of the reasons why they make us seem dumb sometimes. You know what I mean? Like any small movement or anything that kind of makes them nervous, they just skedaddle from that area.
Yeah. Especially, you know, two-year-olds, you get into a good group of two-year-olds, you're going to think they're the dumbest bird ever. But a lot of times, like I said, you hear that one or two gobbles in the evening, that's the one you're going after in the morning.
Yeah.
Usually that's the dominant bird, and you're dealing with a bird that's got hens or if it's later in the year, you're dealing with a bird that is going to rely more on his behavior, which is the hens come to him.
Yeah.
And so he's not going to play. He's not going to play that game.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's really just, you know, what type of bird you're working.
Yeah. So when it comes to, you know, locating a bird that's roosted, are they gobbling in the tree in your experience once they've flown up, or are they on the ground and then gobble and then fly up?
A lot of times they'll gobble. Say you get there an hour and a half before dark. You'll catch them gobbling to their roost tree, and in my 50-60 yards of their roost where they want to be, and they'll shut up.
Okay.
They'll kind of just they'll finish eating. They'll finish doing whatever they need to do. They'll wait for other birds to get to them, and there's about a, in my opinion, 15 to 30 minute window where they're not going to say nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they'll fly up and then they'll gobble that 1, 2, 3 times.
Yeah.
To kind of, you know, hey, I'm up here.
Yeah. Are you responding to their gobbles at all? Let's say with like a hen call, or are you just sticking to like a one hoot owl and then you're done?
If he's gobbling, I know where he's at. I'm not saying nothing.
Yeah.
I don't want, like I said, I have public, I don't want him to know I'm there, and I don't want other hunters to know he's there. So unless he gobbles, he could gobble one time. That would be perfect.
Yeah.
No, I'm not, if he's gobbling, I'm not saying nothing. Hoot out him, nothing. I'm not letting him know.
Gotcha. So let's say he doesn't, like, there's nothing responding when you're in the woods. Do you change the calls up? I mean, are you going for a hen or even a simulated gobble, or are you just strictly sticking to the owl call?
I'll stick to an owl or coyote.
Okay.
Owl.
Gotcha.
But I don't overdo it. I'll do it once or twice, and that's it. I'm not sitting there, you know, for 5 minutes hoot owling every 5 seconds.
Right.
If he's gonna gobble, he's gonna gobble that first or second time.
Right, right. All right. So let's say you've located some birds. How do you set up on those birds the next morning after you've roosted them?
Again, that's terrain specific. If we're dealing with some steep terrain, you know, hilly terrain like we were in Tennessee, they'll be in the bottoms, and I'll get about half to three quarters way up on the ridge, and I'll get just out of sight. I think a lot of guys get too close, and the birds know that they should be able to see something, and they don't, and so that's why they don't go in their direction.
Yeah.
But I'll take it real slow, and when I think, if I make another step, he's going to see me. That's where I'll set up.
Okay.
On an open field or flat terrain, I do the same thing. I don't want him seeing me until he hits the ground.
Gotcha.
Type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's how I do that.
Gotcha. So are you trying to set up, you know, based off of where this roost tree is, where they're in the tree, have you ever noticed any trends, like as far as the terrain is concerned, do you like to set up above them thinking, you know, once they fly down, they're going to go up, or once they fly down, they're going to go low?
The best is at their level.
Yeah.
In steep terrain, they're not going to fly down into the bottom where it's dark, where they can't see really that good. They're either going to fly right at their level, or they're going to fly above.
Yeah.
In flat terrain, it's kind of the same thing. They're not going to fly down through the woods to a spot that they haven't been able to see yet.
Okay.
They're going to either plop down right there close to where they can see in the tree, or they're going to, coast a little bit, but they're not going to go where they can't see from that tree.
Right.
Which is why I'm just out of sight from them.
Yeah. So that's one of those things where they're surveying the land before they're pitching down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. They're moving back and forth on that tree, just looking around, seeing what's around.
Yeah.
That's the thing with, like, especially with decoys and people even calling with no decoys. That bird, they can tell. They're like a deer or anything else. They can tell where you're calling from, and if they think or they know that they should be able to see you, or they can, see you, they're not gonna come. They're not gonna fly down. If you got a decoy, there's a decoy sitting there the whole time, way before dark, and it hasn't moved the whole time, and I do a lot of position decoy. I think a lot of guys mess up on how they position their decoy. The decoy's facing them. There's no reason for them to go to that decoy. If people would just think, that bird's up there analyzing the whole time what's going on.
Yeah.
And if he can't see it, or if something's off, he's not going to come that way.
Yeah.
Or if that decoy is facing him, there's no reason for him to go to that decoy.
Yeah.
He's going to pop down, and that decoy is coming this way. So what's the point of me going over for them?
Right.
It's just survival. It's just survival instincts.
Yeah. This is one thing that for every turkey that I've shot who pitched out of the tree and came right to my call and I shot him. Right. There's equal, if not more amount of times where they pitch out of the tree and they come in, but they're like at 70 yards, right outside of range. Right. And they'll sit there and strut, they'll gobble, they'll drum, they'll do the whole thing, but they just won't come in that extra. There's something there that they just don't like, whether they're henned up or there's no hens at all, whether I have a decoy there or whether there's no decoy at all. It's like, okay, A, I can't see anything here, so why do I need to go over there? B, I see the decoy, they see me strutting, why isn't this hen coming to me? Right? So, I don't know, man. And that's what I get frustrated in, is when I've had success in the past where it's basically, all right, 6:05, they pitch down, boom, dead. Let's go eat breakfast. And then there's, 6:05, and then he's out in front of me for the next 2 hours just strutting, and there's nothing I can do.
It, a lot of times I think it depends on if you're dealing with, like I said, that 2-year-old, or you're dealing with that three or up bird.
Yeah.
Them big old birds, naturally the hen is supposed to go to the gobbler.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a lot of people know that, but I think a lot of times when people go out hunting, it doesn't click in their it, they don't remember it. They wonder, why ain't that gobbler coming to me? Well, he's not supposed to.
Right.
And so I tried to do some things that cause him to come over there,
Yeah.
regardless of what his habits are, or what he's natural his he's supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. All right, so before we get into like this next stage of the strategy, let's go back a second and talk about if you're walking into the on a virgin sit without knowing where the birds are roosted from the night before, right? You don't know, you're just walking into a piece of timber. So it's dark, you get out of your truck, you walk into onto the ground, and it's time to start locating them. What's the first thing that you do?
I'll get on a nice little ridge, and I'll find some spots on the map where I think they should be roosted, or I think they might be, and I'll just stand there and listen. I won't move. I'll just stand there and listen.
Yeah.
And you'll find out really quick if you got birds or not.
Yeah.
I won't. I might hoot out. Like I said, I might hoot out once or twice, and then go to a different spot. It all depends on how I feel about the spot. If I think it should be good, I got a good wheat field or something right there close by, and I know there should be turkeys in there, or it's just a feeling. If I know there should be birds there, I'll stay there and I'll just wait and listen. If I go to a spot and I don't hear nothing, you know, it's getting kind of close to fly down time, I'll go and I'll check another spot out.
Yeah. So how long do you wait?
Go ahead.
How long do you wait then to call? For me, if it's one of those mornings where the sun's coming up, there's no clouds, it's like that perfect, you know, a little crisp in the air, and you know the turkeys are going to gobble at some point. Do you wait for them to gobble before you start to call, or do you do any type of calls before they start to gobble?
If I'm going to hoot owl, I'll hoot owl at them. I won't wait. That's usually what I'll do. And if they gobble, I won't call until I get set up on them.
Okay.
I don't want them to know I'm there until,
you're in position.
I'm in position. If you're stealthy enough and they don't know you're there, you haven't made a sound and you can get it slip in, they're not going to be, you know, they don't know anything's over there. And you make a couple of hand calls, you're just out of sight. That's going to give them more of a push to go over there and see what's over there.
Yeah.
I give it time, you know, when the whippoorwills, when they start making their noises.
Yeah.
It's something I picked up on a long time ago. When those start going off and say I give it 5-10 minutes and I don't hear nothing, usually I'll either hoot out or I'll go to a different spot. When they start hammering, that's when I think everything starts waking up.
Yeah. And that's similar to what I do. I mean, I give it a little time and a lot of it depends on cloud cover for me as when I know that if it's going to be a bright sunny day, for some reason, I've just had more turkeys go crazy on those days, which means I can be a little bit more aggressive with my calling than like on a windy day or a day where it's overcast or maybe even a little spitty rain or whatever. And it's one of those things where then I'll be a little bit more conservative with my calling strategy. After that, you know, I guess I want to say you're probably in the right when you say you won't call at them until you're set up on them. I'm kind of a dumbass. I love to hear gobbles, so I'll just call. And if they're responding, I'll call. And my thought process there is to hold their interest to where I'm setting up at, right? If I'm going somewhere, I want to sound like whatever it is getting closer to them or they can follow me through that whole, you know. And most of the time I kick off with a hen call, real light, real, you know, real soft, and then gradually get more aggressive. If I don't hear anything after a hen call, then I'll scream at them with like an owl, and I don't have an official owl call. I'll just use my voice, you know, and do a hoo 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 whatever. And I know that one sucked, but there's that. And if that doesn't work, then it's just off to the races at that point.
Yeah. Are you talking about calling at them after you're set up or when you're set up?
No. Like, so let's say I do the same thing that you do where I'll get on top of a ridge. I'll get in there quiet.
Right.
Then I just chill, maybe drink some coffee by the base of a tree, wait for the sun to come up. And then, you know, typically I like to wait for one. It doesn't matter where it's at. I'd like to hear one gobble, even if it's a mile away or wherever it's at. Then I know, okay, birds are starting. Then I'll start to call from that position, trying to locate something on the same property or close to me, right? And sometimes that takes a while because, as you and me both know, not all birds are the same, right? So, you know, let's say 500 yards, 600 yards down the valley, there's birds going crazy. But what you're doing is you say, okay, I want to go set up on them. And then there's all these other birds in between you and the one that's gobbling. And then you bust them out, You know what I mean? And that's something that I've learned that I don't want to do. So I give it time to see if any other turkeys are responding before I push in on the bird that is gobbling.
Right. Yeah. The only time that I'll do that where I'll call and call and call is if he's got hens. And the reasoning behind that is I want to tick that main hen off enough where she's going to come over and want to fight.
Investigate. Yeah.
Just try to call the whole flock. I love hearing them gobble too. And, my perfect situation is I want a hen call once and him hammer at me, kind of cut me off almost, and him know that I'm there, and then I'll shut up.
All right.
I use a real soft tree elk, you know, nothing loud, nothing cutting at him. Just real soft. Let him know I'm there and I'm kind of at a distance. And then I'll keep doing it until he hammers me.
Yeah.
And I know that he's gobbling at me, and then I'll shut up.
Yeah.
Now, if he's up on the roof gobbling, you know, after he initially, you know, knows that I'm there and I make contact with him, every now and then, you know, every third, fourth, fifth gobble that he gobbles, I'll call back at him. I'll try to keep his interest then.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it depends on the temperament of the bird. If he gobbles, you know, if I know he's there and he gobbles once, I hen call at him, let him know, hey, there's a hen over here, and he hammers me. If that's all he says, I'm good.
Yeah.
I can tell you a ton of stories where I've killed big old mature birds where that's the case. I'll set up, I'll roost them the night before. I'll set up, he'll gobble, I'll tree yelp, and I won't see him again until he's right. And I might hear a spit in the drum until he's right in front of my decoy and he's dead.
Yeah.
That's my preferred. I love sniping things. I love kind of, you know, him not knowing I'm there until he's flopping on the ground.
Yeah.
That's just, that gets me, that gets me, you know, it gets me off a little bit more than, you know, I love hearing them gobble too, but I hunt, you know, like I said, public, and I just, you get everybody in the world. I could tell you 100 stories too about them gobbling their heads off, and you get every hunter in the woods after you.
Oh yeah. Everybody starts to zero in on the same bird. Been there. Yeah,
exactly. But I'm with you on there. If he's gobbling, I will, like I said, every fourth, there's not a certain number of gobbles, but every fourth, fifth gobble, I'll just soft call to him. Just, hey, I'm still over here. I'm still interested.
Yeah.
And, you know, let him know I'm still there.
Yeah, absolutely. So then you get set up, right? Are you running decoys at all?
Usually it usually depends on the year, the time of year. Early, I'm usually using a Jake and a couple hens. And then later on in the year, I'll use either just one Jake or I'll use a single hen. I won't run as many, but later in the year, I'll use just one. But early, multiple, late, one single.
Gotcha. Okay. And then, so you sit down and you're set up, whether you're using decoys. How do you set up your decoys?
I always set them up, where I want to shoot the bird, where the best shot would be. And I always set them up facing away from the bird, going where I want the bird. I kind of position them like how I want, you know, right, my shooting lanes are, and I'll set him up where I want the bird to come from, and kind of, you know, he's going to want to get in front of that bird and make that bird be able to see him. So you can manipulate them on how they move through there. But usually it's fairly close, you know, 15, 20 yards maybe.
Okay.
And it's always facing away from the bird.
Gotcha. Now, when you say facing away from the bird, does that mean it's facing towards you?
It's kind of quarter. I love a kind of quarter to me.
Okay. So it's almost looking, it's almost looking over one of your shoulders.
Exactly. And you get them coming sideways. You don't get them coming straight on. A lot of times they're strutting. And so if you get them coming sideways, in my mind, if you're bow hunting or if you get a little bit better shot in my mind, you kiki at them, they're throwing their head up. You just, in my eyes, in my mind, I have a little bit better angle at them setting up that way. Your shot opportunities are better than coming straight in or, straight. You got a little bit more, openings.
Yeah. So, how far are you sitting away from your decoys?
Between 15 and 20 yards.
Yeah. Okay. So not necessarily close, not necessarily, and you're using for the most part a shotgun.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
And I shoot a pretty tight wad for that reason. It would depend on my pattern. If I'm shooting like an open cylinder with no, tight wad shell or something like that, I would shoot a lot closer, like under 10 or under.
Yeah.
But I'm shooting like a softball size. If I had it at 10 yards, I would be shooting a softball at it at 10 yards. And I set them up that far just to kind of improve my chances.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right. So once you're actually sitting down on the ground and you're set up, all right, the bird's still in the tree. How are you, what's your calling sequence like at that point?
Well, I'm sitting there, the bird gobbles, I'll give him a real soft tree yelp, 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 real, real soft, real faint. I don't want him to think I'm close, but I want to be loud enough where he can hear me. And I'll just continue to do that until he initiate or I know that he's heard me.
Yeah. Yeah. And then at that point, if he is responding to your call, are you continuously calling or are you shutting up and just hoping he comes in?
If he's by himself or say he's got a couple of jakes with him, I'll call. If he's hammering and he's got a couple of jakes or he's by himself, I'll tree up every four or five times if I know he's still in the tree. If he's got hens and he's hammering, I'm hammering.
Yeah.
If he's got hens, you'll hear him.
Yeah.
You'll hear those hens. Yeah. If I hear them hens, I'm hammering. I'm getting him excited. I'm getting him excited wanting to come to me, and I'm trying to tick that hen off. Like, who the heck is she talking to my guy?
Yeah.
There's a lot of times too. I won't even worry about if that hen's calling to me and that gobbler's. He's kind of hem hauling, he'll gobble every little bit, but that hen's really calling. I'll hammer the hen, and I'll just mock her, whatever her sequence is, whatever her intensity level is, I'll just match it. Yeah. If she goes up, I'll go up. If she goes down, I'll go down. It's really dependent on the hen.
Hen at that point. Yeah.
With that strategy.
Yeah.
Like I said, if he's by himself, I'm just giving him some real soft tree yelps until he initiates and he hammers and hears me.
Yeah.
And then I'm shutting up until he hits the ground.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now he's on the ground. And this is kind of where it gets tricky sometimes, right? Obviously, we have the best case scenario. He hits the ground. He gobbles. You maybe do a respond and then he comes in and you shoot him, right? Those are the perfect, that's the perfect scenario. But now he flies down and he shuts off, right? What's the next step after you sit there? Maybe you call a little bit. He does not respond. He's not responding anymore.
If I'm sitting there and I know he should be on the ground. He shuts up. I'll give it some time. 'Cause there's a lot of times I've called and, you know, I initiate that. They hit the ground. They don't say a single thing until they're right in front of me.
Yeah.
If you're hunting pressured birds, a lot of times that's the case. They're not going to gobble until they're on you. until they're right where they should be able to hear that bird or see that bird, they're not going to make a peep.
Yeah.
So I'll give it some time. I'll usually give it about an hour. I know that's a long time. But I'll give it till about 7 o'clock because they're just going to work. And a lot of times all you're going to hear is a spit in the drum. 90, I would, this sounds weird, but I would bet 90% of the time that's what you're going to hear. You're not going to hear him hammering.
Yeah.
When he hits the ground on with pressured birds.
Yeah.
Now, if you're hunting, a private piece. Yeah. He's probably going to be hammering. Hey, you know, where are you at? Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about pressure birds. You're going to, you know, I'm coming or, you know, I'm over here.
Yeah.
And if they're that close, you're in the game, you're ready to play.
Yeah.
And I'll just give them real soft, you know, I don't want them to know, hey, I'm bam right here, but I'll just give them some real soft yelps and just let him work his way in. A lot of times when they're spitting and drumming like that, they're on their way.
Yeah. Is there but, any change to that strategy if it's windy and, you know, obviously the call, the wind is going to disrupt the call and whether they hear you or you're having trouble hearing them or, cause sometimes, and I don't know what your experience is in this, if it's kind of a windy day and they turn around and gobble and they're like, you don't know this, but it can be hard to hear them. As even if they turn around then again and gobble, so you may not hear it. And then that direction is facing towards you, right? And then you're like, okay, well, there they are. They turn around on a windy day and that gobble could be lost. And even though they're still there, you just didn't hear it.
Yeah, that's a tricky thing. On windy days, I kind of like setting up in a little bit more open area. Or where I can see a little bit because you're right. That's tricky because you don't know really what's a bird that's gobbling straight at you is, you know, like you said, you can hear if he's facing away, he could sound like he's 100 yards further down.
Yeah.
It really throws your hearing off. So I like to set up in a little bit. If it's a windy, nasty day, and the birds are going to want to do that anyways. They're going to want to be in a more open area or, you know, a field edge, something, especially if it's raining, get out there and dry off, you know.
Yeah.
Or if it's been raining all night. But they're going to want to see just like you are.
Yeah.
And that's what I'll do. My setup will determine that. Or the weather can determine my setup. If I know it's going to be windy, rainy, I'll set up on them more open.
Right.
Maybe even if it's a little bit further away. But if it's a cool, calm morning, I'll set up as close as I can without him seeing me.
I got you. All right. And then, all right, so he's on the ground. He's starting to work in. And let's say now you see him, right, whether he is or is not without a hen or other turkeys, but now he's held up. He just doesn't want to come that next 15, 20 yards, and he's hung up. What's your calling strategy at that point?
I'll try to get him fired up. If he's hung up where he don't, like, that's as far as he's going to come, I'll change a little bit. I'll try to get him. I'll start cutting at him. Try to get him fired up where he starts gobbling a lot, trying to get him real excited. Try to get him to finish.
Yeah.
If he's got hens, a lot of times it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That hen is what
is dictating.
Is going to matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could call and make him gobble 100 times in a minute, but if that hen don't want to come over there, he's not coming.
Yeah.
So if he's by himself I'll, and he's hung up and he's like, I'm not coming any further, I'm going to try to like get him, hey, you really want to come over here. You know, I'm excited. I want to be with you. You really need to come over here. Cause maybe, you know, that hen doesn't, you know, for some and that hen doesn't want to be where he's at. The hen wants to be where she's at.
Yeah.
And so try to just throw that in my head. She really wants to be over there. I'll go over there with her.
Yeah.
That happens sometimes.
Yeah.
But, I just try to fire him up, try to get him gobbling real hard again.
Yeah.
Or try to get him hammering, and then, hopefully that'll do the trick.
Yeah. Just get him to come that next little bit.
Yeah.
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 All right. So whether he shows up and eventually maybe he disappears because he's hung up, or he hits the ground and he doesn't gobble at all, and you just, he's probably with hens or whatever, and he goes the other direction, right? How long do you give it before you get up and start moving, start the run and gun process?
If he hits the ground and I know instantly he's going the other way, I'll give it, like, say 15 minutes after they hit the ground and he's consistently going the other way, I'm up and I'm swinging around.
Yeah.
That I do not wait. I go, because they have it in their mind where they want to be. Right. That hen has it in her mind where she wants to be. So you can't wait. You can't hesitate.
Yeah.
If they hit the ground and they're gone, you better be gone too.
Yeah.
If they hit the ground and they hesitate and they're kind of, what are we going to do today? That's when I kind of give it some time. But it's going to be either or. They're either, you know, obviously, they're going to hit the ground. They're just going to kind of loaf around, you know, this is where we're going to be for a while, or they're going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
But if they're moving, you better be around them. Otherwise you're wasting your time.
Yeah. Once they hit the ground, do you think they are an animal of routine where, okay, well, we know this ag field is up here, we're going to go to the ag field, or we know that there's this open ridge, we're going to hit this open ridge. Do you think that they have a routine where they want to do the same thing every day, or are they more of a random animal?
I think they have loops. I think they want to do the same thing every day.
Yeah.
If they got food, water, safety, why would you change?
Yeah.
I think the only way they change is if the food source or the water is gone.
Yeah.
Then they'll change slightly.
Or pressure.
But I mean, how the pressure, yeah, something like that, they'll change.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of times they're just like a deer. They have a loop, they have a routine, and it's survival, and that's what they're going to do.
Right. All right. So the next question, and we're going to take a little sidebar here. Let's say you go and you spook a bird, right? Have you noticed, let's just say, or a group of birds, right? Have you noticed that the timber that you spooked them in, or I guess my question is, how long do you think it takes for a bird to recover to where he goes back to being active and gobbling again?
In that particular spot, like say you spook a bird, you shoot him, shoot miss, or
shot and a miss is kind of something different, because that's a real big spook. You know what I mean? Let's just say you crest a hill, he sees you, and he takes off.
You better move around him.
Yeah,
he's not coming.
Yeah,
and them turkeys, did they hear them putts? They're not. It's like a deer blowing through the woods. They're not. If they clear the area, you get up and move. Don't stay.
Yeah.
You're wasting your time.
Right. Right. Okay. So, but at that point, are you trying to like go all the way around them and try to get in front of them? And so they're getting spooked back to you eventually. And then you set up and try to call again, or do you just write that bird off and go find another one?
No, I'll try to get in front of them and try to work them again from a different angle.
Yeah.
I'm not going to leave birds to go find other birds. If you spook them and they're going in a direction where you can get around them, if you can get around them, they're not that smart where there's another hunter over here.
Yeah.
If you bust the flock, you know, I use this a lot in the fall. If you bust the flock, and you know they're running, they're scared. If they're going to want to group back up, so you're calling, they're going to want to get back with other turkeys. that's safety too. They get more, the more turkeys, the better. So swing around them, you call the same birds in.
Okay. All right. Has that worked for you a lot? Because in the past, that's minimal success for me.
It depends on the time of year. If they can see throughout the woods, like say right now, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
But if you got some foliage where they can't, for some reason, I don't think they like the early season. That's why I think they're flocked up so much. I can't explain it. Just in my experience, I don't think they like the open woods. But later in the year, yeah, I've had really good success. Even I've shot at some and missed, and within 30 minutes, I'm back on them and they're hammering at me again.
Yeah.
It's really year dependent, or the time of year.
Okay. Now, you know, for me, once I shoot at them and let's just say I miss, they run away. Me personally, I write that bird off. He's gone, and it's going to take a long time for him to recover in order for me to try to locate him again. I typically just pack up and I go a mile down the road or onto the way on the other side of the property, and I set up and I try to locate a bird again. That's just what I do. On a big intrusion like that, what do you try to stick with those birds even after the gun goes off?
I'll sit there for a little bit and I'll just listen. And a lot of times he'll tell you how, you know, a gunshot, you would think, oh my God, that bird's not going to make a noise the rest of the day. But I've witnessed and I've experienced a lot of times that they'll go off and maybe 30 minutes later after you miss, say you miss, they'll start hammering again.
Yeah.
So I won't write him off until, you know, 30 minutes to an hour. If I don't hear, if it's dead silent after 30 minutes, you know, to an hour, then yeah, I'm going somewhere else. If I don't hear nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, a lot of that depends on time of day, right? If it's right in the morning, right off the roost, you shoot, it echoes down, everything's, you know, quiets down for a little bit. A lot of times they rebound easier, as opposed to, let's say, you finally get an opportunity at noon or something like that. It's the heat, you know, it's middle of the day. And then after that, like for me, they just stop. They're done. And unless you can get them to gobble, you're hard pressed to locate them again.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a lot of times when I would move around them. Like if I could get around on the other side of them, that's when I would do that. Yeah, I would agree with you on that. Early in the morning, like if they didn't have their coffee, like a lot of us, their foggy mind, something happens, you know. But later in the middle of the day, you know, they're woke up, they're more acute. And something like that happens, yeah, they're not going to put up with it. I would agree with you on that.
Yeah. So, okay. Now, outside of that, let's say you don't get the opportunity. You get out to the timber late. They're already on the ground. It's, let's say, 11 o'clock or something like that, midday. And you go to a new piece of property and you're trying to locate one. Walk us through how you walk into the timber or onto this new property, try to locate a bird midday, calling strategies, decoy strategies, the whole thing.
Say I hunt in the morning, I don't see, I don't hear, I don't do any good. I'll find a flat. I'll find a good piece where I think they're going to be loafing, feeding. That could be on an oak flat, or it could be in, like we had in Tennessee, they were in the bottoms a lot where it was really getting green grass, you know, the water was down there. That's just where the green up was starting, last week. I'll go to spots where I think they're going to be feeding, or loafing around, on a hot, sunny day. I'll go where I think they're going to, where shade is, like a cedar edge. I'll work along a cedar edge. I won't go flopping out through the middle of the open hardwood and try to find them. I'll work edges just like if I'm deer hunting. I don't want to stick out like a sore thumb, but I'll work the edges and I'll look for scratchings. If I find some real fresh sign, usually I'll set up on that and make some calls, and I'll just see if I can get one to answer.
Yeah.
But usually I'm looking for where loafing spots, a flat, an oak flat, oak, acorn flat, or a corner of a field where there's some good wheat, or a creek bottom where I know there's some, if it's early in the year, where there's some green grass coming up. It's usually food dependent by then. Yeah. I'm really just where I think they would be feeding.
Okay. And I guess some people call those strut zones, right? Where they go and they just sit there and strut all day while the hens are feeding. Even some of the times where they don't have hens, right? They're going someplace just to, they're basically peacocking and they're trying to show off for something to see them.
Right.
Yeah.
In my experience, that strut time, I think that's, 9 to 11. And I really think that, say 11 on into the afternoon, I think they're moving, trying to find birds. I don't think they're really strutting. I don't think they're really, doing anything like that. I think they're trying to find other birds. That's when you're really gonna, I think you're gonna hear your a single gobble, going through the woods.
Yeah.
You hear a gobble on this one point, and then 5 minutes later you hear him 100 yards from there, and he just working through the woods.
Yeah.
That can be a lot of fun too. That a lot of times then I'll just set up on signs, say I get some good fresh scratching, I'll just sit there and I'll just wait.
Yeah.
Because they're looking, they move a lot.
Yeah.
When that middle part of the day, noon to say 4 or 5 o'clock, they're moving.
Yeah. How often do you, let's say you don't have any luck throughout the day, how often do you go back to, let's say, like a roost tree or a roost ridge where they've historically been in the past? Do you set up and try to catch them coming back to a roost tree?
Yeah, I'll do that. I like to get in early because you never know if there's a lot of food, if they're not having to move a long ways, say their loop, you have knowledge of them and their loop isn't that big. I'll get in there early, say a couple hours before fly up.
Yeah.
And I'll wait. Cause I don't want to spook anything. I don't want anything to know I'm there. So I'll get in there a little bit early. I won't set up right on the roost. I'll set up maybe 50 to 75 yards from it.
Okay.
In the direction, and I'll face the direction I think they're coming from. I won't face the roost tree, but I'll get in between them and the roost tree.
Okay. One of the most fun hunts I ever had was this one year I had an ex-girlfriend, and I took her nephew out hunting, and we killed a bird at like 7 something in the evening. We worked him for hours. We could see him out in this CRP field, strutting back and forth with some other toms, and he was like 500 yards away, and we'd call and he'd respond, and it took him like an hour to 2 hours to work his way in. And we eventually shot him, I think coming back to roost, because we got between him and the timber, and he was eventually worked his way in. And that was a real fun hunt that we were just sitting there going, we were just waiting and waiting and waiting, but we could see it. So it made it a little bit more fun and enjoyable. But those evening hunts, and although they're not as vocal, can still be fun.
Oh yeah. They can be, if you got a good high pressure day and the birds are at and everything's active, they can be the best hunts. They can be, you know, because they're getting frisky. It's everything's cooling, especially if it's a hot day. Everything's cooling down. You know, if you're hot, and then you get cool, I mean, you get a little bit frisky, and yeah, it can be the best hunt of the day is right there that hour before they go flying up.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So is there anything else that we haven't talked about as far as strategy is concerned? I know that, obviously there's 1,000 different scenarios we could sit here and talk about, but I think we did a good job of covering, you know, a handful of the most common, scenarios, that there are.
Yeah. There's two that I really wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
One is if you hoot owl and the bird gobbles, there's no reason to hoot owl at him again. I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, if you hoot owl and you get in close, like this is a real sore subject because I just dealt with this in Tennessee. but if you hoot owl and the bird gobbles, you know where that bird is. There's no reason to do it again. There's no reason to hurt any closer and then do it again. So I think people need to be a little bit more sparingly on their hooting. You know, that's a predator. That's, you know, or a coyote, those are predator animals. That if you're going to work that bird up, making them nervous if you're getting in closer and closer and closer. So I think people really need to be cautious on how much they use those type of calls. If you do that and then all of a sudden you're setting up and then you start hen calling from that position, that bird, I'm sorry, I don't mean to burst in your bubbles, but that bird's not going to come to you.
Yeah.
They're not the brightest, but they're smart enough and their number one thing is survival and they're not going to play that game.
Yeah. And I think, what do people call that? A shock gobble.
Yeah. They're shocking them. And like I said, shocking them, that's not, you're not a use some kind of non-predator call to shock them. If you're doing that, yeah, I'm precautionary. I don't want to keep shocking them as I'm going in. All I need to do is hear that bird gobble one time. I think people on the roost, I think people want to hear them gobble too much.
Yeah.
When they're on the tree, you only need to hear them gobble one time.
Yeah.
When you're moving in on them like that.
Right. One thing that we didn't talk about was like midday predator calls or calls. In the past, I've used a crow call as a locator or an owl call as a locator. How often do you get responses using one of those calls, let's say in the afternoon?
It depends on how the type of day. You get a high pressure day where everything's, you know, that you can get a good. It really depends on that. And two, on that, I'm doing it once or twice and I'm moving to a different spot. If they don't do it the first or second time, I'm not sitting in one spot crow calling for an hour.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
I'm hitting it. I think people overcall with everything, not just hen calls or gobble calls or whatever kind of call you're using. Either do it once or twice. If they haven't responded by then, go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. I can remember when I used to think that turkey hunting was a lot like deer hunting. And I can remember when my uncle was teaching me how to turkey hunt. I was under the impression that you had to get out there real early in the pitch black, stand in the timber, just wait around, and, you know, get out there and be quiet. And we pull up to this place one time and I go to reach for the door handle and he's like, just hang on a second. And he lights up a cigarette and drinks his coffee and windows are down so he can hear him. And in the distance, we're already hearing turkeys, you know, going off. And I'm just like, hey, man, we got to go. We got to go. He's like, nah, just relax. And rolls the window up, puts his cigarette out, finishes his coffee, takes a piss. And I shut my door real quiet and he slams that son of a gun as hard as he can. And then like two birds gobbled down in this valley below us. And he's like, that's where we're going. And we shot one of those toms that morning. So it's crazy how I guess that shot cobble that sometimes can be, you know, I don't know, very effective.
Yeah, I'm thinking about, there's a spot that I hunt down in this river bottom. It's got a train that goes along that river bottom, and I never have to locate them. I mean,
The train does it for you, huh?
around 5 o'clock every morning, that train will come through, and then about 5:30, it's about every 30 minutes the train will come through, and that it's the same thing. They'll light up when that train's coming through and hitting that whistle. There's a little town right there close,
Yeah.
and yeah, it's just,
Yeah.
people I think need to be a little bit smart with it if they're doing it on their own, out in the middle of the woods trying to shock them.
Yeah.
You only need to do it once or twice.
Yeah.
If you want to hear that bird gobble, make sure he's on the ground when
Right.
you're wanting to hear him gobble. Don't hammer him on the limb.
Yeah. All right. So,
Especially with predator calls.
yeah. So, don't move in using predator calls. Locate them and then either switch to a turkey call or just shut up, basically.
Right.
There was another thing that you wanted to bring up.
Decoys and decoy setups.
Yeah.
Early, I think people get they poo-poo on decoys, or I think they don't like them because they don't use them properly. I think if you really understood and analyzed positioning and behavior, decoys are very, very effective. Early in the year, I'll use a flock. I'll use multiple decoys. I'll use a smaller strutter, a Jake, and a couple hens, and I'll position them. I always like position of the decoy is number one in my mind. I always position them facing away or quartering away from where the bird is coming or where I expect them to come from, and causing that bird to come once want to swing around. Hey, look at me. I'm right, and then later in the year, I like to switch to either. If it's late, a single hen. But here in recent years, I found myself more and more just taking a Jake decoy. I use Dave Smith hens, and then I use an Avian X Jake. I think quality of decoy is real key. Them higher end decoys, yeah, it sucks paying that much, but if you buy once, those things are going to last you forever. If you buy good quality ones,
Yeah.
and they really do. The body position, I forget, it's an HDR Jake or something it's something like that that Avian X makes. It's HD something, but the body position on that thing, I found myself over the last couple of years, a lot of times that's the only thing I take, and my strategy behind that is. If that gobbler sees that Jake, he knows that if there's possibly a hen there, he wants to get there and show off for that hen instead of letting that Jake have, if that Jake's there's possibly a hen there, so he wants to get there. Hey, I'm right here.
Yeah.
It did plays on their behavior a little bit better, I think, than just a single hen. If the hen's there, and he sees the hen, he can strut. And if he sees the hen sees him, the hen should go to hurt him, right? And
Yeah.
so if he sees just a single Jake, and in his mind, oh, there could be a hen there, but that hen don't see me, it puts in his mind, hey, I need to get over there to where I can try to see, that hen can see me, where, so he's going to go where that Jake's at. And
Yeah.
it plays on their behavior a little bit. And I've that's a killer decoy. I've shot, numerous birds here in the recent years just using that single Jake. And I never go in the woods without it. It's like my American Express card. I just
That's your go-to.
that's my go-to. I regardless if I think I'm going to use decoys or not, I'm using that Jake.
I gotcha. Yeah.
And two, especially if I'm kind of open hunting a little bit opener woods or open terrain, he's going to want to fight that Jake. He's going to want to knock that. He's so His focus is going to be on that Jake.
Yeah.
And if I got to move, or if I got to, if I'm kind of in the open where I got to set up and kind of open, it kind of takes the attention off of me.
Right.
It's kind of a dual thing. It kind of just, hey, look at that, Jake. And you can get, there's multiple times where I've been able to rise up, you know, say I'm too far on the tree and I need to move a little bit, or I've, you know, had to swing on him or something, and that the gobbler never even knows I'm there. And yeah. So I think if people, if they studied and they analyzed on a little bit on how to use decoys, and got some better high end decoys. Yeah, I know the price sucks, but they're worth it. Trust me.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I'm on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. One time, I pulled into this this field, and it was combined, but it still had the long stubs on the bottom. And a black trash bag had blown into the field and got stuck on one of those corn stalks, and the wind was hitting it just right where it was puffed up a little bit, and a tom turkey was strutting circles around it. No joke. And then I told this story on the last Hunting Gear podcast, but back in the White Knuckle production days, I was filming Todd. He had this really big tom strutting back in one of his food plots, and we found a hen decoy that had been hit by a lawnmower, and there was an ant's nest in it. And we put an arrow in the ground, stuck that jalopy of a decoy on that arrow, and the wind was hitting it just right, so it would move a little bit. And eventually that turkey came in, he shot it. And it was like, at the time, it was the world record atypical, turkey with archery tackle.
I remember that.
Yeah. So,
I remember him telling some stories about that.
Yeah. The good ones work. And guess what? The shitty ones work too. So,
right. Yeah. My theory on that and using the higher end decoys, you're less likely to have them like stop up, and be like, yeah, what the heck is that?
Yeah.
Right. There's lots of times anything can work. You tell stories like that and just like,
right,
how the heck? I'm just trying to put the odds in my favor.
Yeah.
As much as I can.
That's fair.
And them ultra realistic decoys, if you're, especially if you're hunting big mature birds, they're a have to.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I tell you what, man, I really appreciate you taking time once again out of your day to hop on and talk turkeys with me.
I appreciate it, man. It's always a good time. Hopefully we can do it again. I got a few more legs in my turkey tour. Like I said, Tennessee was a success, and I got a couple more trips. So if nothing else, we can get down at the end of the season and talk some more turkeys or talk some whitetails coming up. But yeah. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. And the way the weather's looking, for me, one of my other favorite things to do is look for mushrooms. So I think this year turkey season and mushroom season are actually going to probably line up fairly well with each other. And I might be getting out into the woods right in the morning, trying to shoot a turkey, and then going and looking for mushrooms after the birds shut up.
There ain't nothing wrong with that. I've done that here in Missouri a lot of times. May, that's a good time to do it. Yeah, you're so worn down, you don't want a turkey hunt all day, so you get up and never bad looking around for morels.
Absolutely. All right, man, thank you.
Thank you.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode in the books. Huge shout out to Jonathan for taking time out of his day to talk turkeys with us. Huge shout out to all of you for taking time out of your day to listen to this podcast. And I am going to say I'm sending good vibes out into the universe and into the turkey woods across this great nation of ours. And hopefully those good vibes hit you. Hopefully you find success. Hopefully the birds are gobbling like bananas when you get into the timber. And I'll tell you what, man, Good vibes in, good vibes out, and we'll talk to you next time.